A very pointed and a very important question for you today. Is God real? How do you know He's real? You've been a Christian for a long time, perhaps, but did you ever have that wonderment in your life? Is God really real? How do we know that God is real? Is He just wishful thinking? Are we just being positive in our thoughts? Well, the answer is God is real. And how do we know that? Well, we're going to talk about that today and possibly over the next few weeks. A gentleman by the name of Lee Strobel has written a powerful Bible study. Now, he wrote a book originally. It's called Faith Under Fire, and What Should We Do When Our Faith is Under Fire? Lee Strobel was an atheist who came to understand the truth of God's Word only after study and research proved to him beyond a shadow of a doubt that God is real. He's exactly who he says he is. Consider the following list of events, if you would, when you consider whether God is real. A spectacular sunset. Imagine the birth of a baby or the healing of a broken bone. The complete recovery from cancer without medical treatment of an individual. You could even consider my condition, where I should have died 4 times, but the doctors scratched their head because God brought me through it, and I'm still here 22 years later. Which of these events, and a stack of them longer, more, can you label as a miracle? And why can you label it as a miracle? Well, what is a miracle? It's a supernatural occurrence. It's an occurrence that takes place that man cannot explain. It's a miracle with a supernatural occurrence is involved because man has no explanation of the situation. Have you or anyone you have ever known had a personal experience that you believe to be a modern-day miracle or a supernatural occurrence? Well, you can share about that experience. That will help you to understand that God is real. Otherwise, you cannot explain it. It was Albert Einstein that said there are 2 ways to look at life. One is that nothing is a miracle, and the other thing is that everything is a miracle. And you know, you can suppose that many people find it difficult, if not impossible, to believe in miracles. What about you? Do you believe it's logical and reasonable to believe that a supernatural realm exists, that God is real? Why or why not? A man by the name of J.P. Moreland outlines 3 strands of evidence to support the occurrence of the supernatural of God. Bangs have bangers, rigged dice have riggers, and information, that's referring to DNA, has informers. So how well do you believe that these 3 categories of evidence support the belief in God, and why? Bangs have bangers. You know, you don't make a bang unless somebody made the bang. Rigged dice have riggers. Somebody had to rig those dice so that they'd roll a certain way. Information in DNA has to have someone to put it together. It didn't just assemble itself. So you see, these are the 3 areas that prove that God is real. Edward Tabash argues that if there really is a banger, a dice thrower, an informer, then such a being should not play dice with our knowledge and should be amenable to direct experience. In other words, if this guy really is true, there really is a banger, he should not be playing a game with someone else who doesn't know he has the ability to do it. You should not be able to explain away how something happened in a game. If you take the part where he said the rigged dice have riggers, if you play with a person who rigs dice, you don't know if those dice are rigged or not. He could have multiple sets behind the counter all rigged the same way, and you wouldn't know it. And if you play against him, then it would be the same as you trying to figure out why it was that the numbers came up the same every time he rolled the dice. And you, without accepting the fact that someone had rigged it, would try to explain it by theories and by evidence and by what you see and what you feel with the dice. And that's exactly what man has done to disprove God. You see, the truth is there had to be a rigger on those dice and there had to be a creator in the universe. And Dr. Moreland goes on to claim that healings occur today. Well, do you agree with that? I've heard many people say God stopped healing people after the turn of the century. Well, I'm living proof he did not stop healing people. Had God not still been in the healing business, I wouldn't be alive today. Many times, in fact, had it happened once, it happened again and again and again. And it's all because God still heals. And I have to make this point for you to understand clearly. God does not heal everyone. One of the things that I learned the hard way through all of this, in fact, it wasn't with my own experience where I learned this lesson. It was through that of my five-year-old son in 1992 when he had a massive stroke at the age of five in February, February the 5th, 1992. That little boy got sick and we took him to the hospital and turned out he had a massive stroke. The doctors were astounded. He even lived through the night. But when we got him there, he was paralyzed completely on one side. One arm and one leg was useless. You pick his arm up and drop it, and it was like a rag doll. It would drop to the bed below him. His face was drawn and pulled like that of an adult stroke victim. And I'm sure if you've ever seen someone who's had a massive stroke that affected their face, you understand what that looks like. Now, today, he is 35 years old, and I can tell you, he has no residual damage. His face is not pulled or twisted or distorted. He has no residual damage in his brain. Because after 8 days in the hospital, my son, who had a massive stroke and was told by the doctors within the second and third day into the whole thing that he'd never be normal again. He'd never walk again right, upright. He'd never have the use of his arm and his leg again. And 8 days after he was admitted, that boy walked out of the hospital. They took him down to meet me where I'd picked him up with the car in a wheelchair. The nurse stopped about 30 feet from where I was and she locked the brakes on the wheelchair and got down on her knees on that sidewalk. And she looked at him and I could hear what she said as she said, "Son, would you like for me to roll you on over there to your daddy or would you like to get up and walk over there to him?" He said, "I want to walk." He jumped up out of that wheelchair and ran to me and dove into my arms. And we both sat on the edge of the concrete on that sidewalk that day in a puddle of tears as God had healed our son. But then when I got back to work, one of my coworkers 3 days later started avoiding me. A man who'd been friends with me. He and I had become really good friends. Our families had begun to share things together. We had shared some events and things at our churches together and attended each other's church and worshiped together. We were very close friends. He began to avoid me after I got back to work. And I finally, one afternoon, a week or so later, I was able to counter him when he came into the building. He was alone and he went into his office and closed the door. My car was there. He didn't know I was on the premises. I was in the building after hours with the doors locked trying to catch up on my work. And I saw him come in, and I walked over to his office, peeped the door open, and saw that he was not on the phone and not busy, just sitting behind his desk, apparently unwinding after a hard day. And when I opened the door, he froze, and he looked up at me, and he said, "Ed, I can't do this." And I said, "Do what? Have I offended you? I at least need to know that." And he looked at me, and he said, "No, you haven't offended me. We're good friends." He said, "I owe you this much. Come in and close the door." I sat down at his desk and he reached over and opened up the top drawer on the right and he pulled out a picture of a little boy that looked to be about 5 years old, same age as my son. And he looked at me with tears on his face as he stood that picture up for me to look at. And he said, "I am so glad that God healed your son." He said, "I am so glad more than you can imagine. I just want to know why he didn't heal mine." His five-year-old son had died a year before I met him from cancer. He had leukemia. I had no idea. I did not know that until that moment. I sat there in stunned silence. He said, "God healed your son, but he didn't heal mine, and I'd like to know why." What am I going to tell him? Well, I tell you what I told him. I said, "I don't understand that either. There's a lot of questions I'm going to ask God when I get to heaven, and that's going to be the first one. Why didn't you heal everyone? Every Christian person who prays and believes, why didn't you heal everyone?" My father was deaf since I was 3 years old, stone cold deaf as a result of a bomb explosion in the Korean War. And because of that, he never heard my voice after I was 3 years old when he finally went totally deaf. Last time he heard my voice. As an adult, I was a pastor. I was his pastor for 2 out of the 5 of his final years of his life, a pastor at my home church. Yes, God sent me there. The hardest place in the world to pastor is your home church. Jesus Him said that a prophet's not without honor, save in his home country. It was hard because people remembered me as a child, and they remembered me as a teenager, a rough teenager. And it was hard for many of them to accept the fact that I was a pastor. But my dad sent me there, not for them, but to minister to him, to my father. And I was able to be his pastor. And you know, he told me many times, he said, I wish I'd give anything if I could hear you preach one time, or if I could hear you on the radio one time. He said it would make me happier than anything in the world. But you know, God didn't grant that request. He died a couple of years later in our home. And when my father passed away, he died with a smile on his face. He was ready to go. And I'm convinced to this day, and I said it in his funeral as I stood before my family that day, I believe with all of my heart, Dad got his request that day. For right this moment, he can hear me. And this morning, he heard me on the radio. I believe God answered that request. But he had to get to heaven for it to happen. You see, ladies and gentlemen, healing is in God's privy, not ours. But God still heals. He still heals people. Consider miracles and the purpose of miracles. John 2:23 says, Now while he, that's Jesus, was in Jerusalem at the feast of the Passover, many people saw the miraculous signs he was doing and believed his name. John chapter 10, verse 24 and 25. The Jews who were there gathered around him, around Jesus, and they said, How long will you keep us in suspense? If you are the Messiah, tell us plainly. And Jesus said, I did tell you, but you do not believe. The words and miracles I do in my Father's name will testify about me. Now, according to these passages, what's the value of a miracle? Even though we're 20 centuries removed from these events, how is that point still valid? Well, first, whatever begins to exist has a cause. Secondly, the universe began to exist. Thirdly, therefore, the universe has a cause because it exists. The eminent scientist Sir Arthur Eddington wrote these words, The beginning seems to present insuperable difficulties unless we agree to look on it as frankly supernatural. That's William Lane Craig said those words. Well, Lee Strobel said, There is a time when I would have agreed wholeheartedly with Edward Tabash. The supernatural is a figment of wishful thinking. As an atheist, Lee Strobel said, I ruled out the possibility of a supernatural realm. Later, though, I became more open-minded. I decided to follow the evidence of science and history, no matter where it pointed. And even if it seemed to indicate that miracles are possible and the supernatural does exist, I would believe the facts. Based on the kind of scientific evidence that Moreland describes, as well as the convincing historical evidence for the resurrection of Jesus that I describe in my book, The Case for Christ, I became firmly convinced that the universe is the product of a creator and that Jesus of Nazareth truly is his son. To me, that's the most logical conclusion I could reach. So here's my question for you. Does it make more sense to deny the supernatural because of an assumption than it's impossible to follow the evidence wherever it leads? Well, chart it. It's all there. You can find out for yourself that the evidence is clear. Jesus Christ is who he said he was. He is God. Well, many people ask the question, is Christ a prophet or is he the Son of God? Is he really the Son of God? Or just a man calling himself a prophet? Mild-mannered Clark Kent stuttered and stammered through a meeting with his editor at the Daily Planet. Lois Lane entered the room, and he frantically fumbled his notes, and he nervously took a sip of coffee. And as his thick glasses slid down his nose, he shoved them back up using the heel of his hand He spills hot coffee down the front of his shirt. Moments later, as Clark is blotting the coffee stain, a change comes over his face. His super hearing has detected the screams of men and women miles away. It's a train's brakes that have failed, and sparks are flying as the wheels screech against the tracks. Hundreds of passengers are trapped as the train travels faster and faster, out of control, toward a broken bridge. Our weakling friend makes up a quick excuse and rushes out of the office to a nearby phone booth and emerges as someone his co-workers would never expect. It was Superman. Leaping over the Metropolis skyscrapers in a single bound, he flies at supersonic speed to rescue the runaway train as it hurtles toward disaster. Seconds before the train, as it falls into the abyss, Superman transports the train and all of its passengers back to safety on the other side. He even goes back and repairs the damaged track. All is well again because Superman saved the day. What a hero, Superman. It's too bad he doesn't really exist. You see, we could sure use somebody like him that would intervene in our world and make things right when the devil tears them all to pieces. But Superman is the stuff of comic books and film and imagination. Nobody really believes that Superman exists. There is no proof that any Superman who came from another planet and is powerful enough to stop a speeding locomotive toward an abyss, to pick it up and put it back on the tracks safely, and then to repair the tracks with his laser beam eyes, ever existed. It's a figment of someone's imagination. Well, you know, there are still those who believe in a Superman of sorts. They call him by a different name, Jesus Christ. But you know, Jesus was not a comic book creation. His story has been around a lot longer than Superman. Jesus came to us as a baby. He was foretold in the Old Testament. He performed miracles in front of many people, not once or twice, but many times over the course of 3 years, and many people saw his miracles. Over 500 saw him after he was resurrected and before he ascended into heaven, and each one of them would have died without changing their opinion, even under the threat of death, refused to change their story about what they saw in Christ Jesus. But you see, Jesus Christ had a normal side. He was human. He ate food with his disciples. He drank water. He got hot and thirsty and tired. Impressive as he was, he still seems weak and needy, which sounds rather ordinary and human. But then again, the records state that he turned water into wine and performed all of those miracles. Some think Christ was nothing more than a teacher or a prophet. They believe, some of us believe, that Jesus Christ was God himself. God in the flesh. If he was, he had to be perfect. One intervening in history that he himself created. Divine and all-powerful. Yet unbelievable, the stuff of myths and comic books exist. And Christ, too many times by too many people, is relegated to the comic book section. Jesus Christ is real. He is real. Don't forget that. If Jesus Christ is real in your heart and in your life, celebrate him today. And never forget that God loved you enough to give up his place in heaven and to take on a mortal body, and to sacrifice his life for you, so that you and I might have life and have it more abundantly. Accept Christ today. It is by far the best thing you will ever do.
Who taught the sun where to stand in the morning? And who told the ocean you can only come this far? And who showed the moon where to hide till evening? Whose words alone can catch a falling star? Well, I know my Redeemer lives. that spins things in orbit, runs to the weary, the worn, and the weak, and the same gentle hands that hold.
Say a special thank you for listening to Sunday Worship. That's all the time we have for the program. And do be sure to listen twice on Sunday, 11 o'clock on Sunday morning, and again at 6 p.m. that evening, all Central Time. Go to the website, joychristianradio.com. Use a credit card or debit card there. You can text it. Text the word GIVE, the amount in dollars, to 833-843-2848. Or you can mail it in. The address is Post Office Box 6, Quitman, Mississippi, 39355. Thank you for your prayers, and thank you for your financial contributions that keep us on the air. This is Joy Christian Radio. Have yourself a wonderful day, and I'll see you next time on Sunday Worship.